This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 17. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on 0208 816 7691. And you can email us on coach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. Well, welcome to the show, Garrett. Welcome to the show, Berners.
How are you, lads? You all right? Good, yeah. Good.
Yes, I'm very good. Excellent. Enjoying the sunshine and getting ready for a very busy cricket season after an intense training session last night. So we're getting there.
Oh, good work.
Now, Garrett, I've got a little bit of follow-up that you posted on the Pitch Vision Academy website in your coach education series. And you were talking about Chris Gayle and hitting through the line. And you described that as hitting in an arc between, I think it was mid-on and square leg, I think it was, that you talked about in that article?
Yeah, he hits from mid-off. He hits predominantly from sort of straight of extra cover around to deep backward square leg as his arc, as in the way that he plays, on the angles that he plays, yeah.
So my follow-up question to that was, when normally when you would talk about hitting through the line, you talk about an arc probably maybe extra cover round to mid-wicket. So how does Gayle hit through the line and still manage to get the ball around square leg?
Because he uses angles. I mean, batting, if you take batting to its mathematical sense, then it's geometry, isn't it? So angles play a huge part in what that line is. So, you know, the question that you pose me effectively, I get a lot, is, you know, is it about playing straight or hitting straight? Well, he is hitting straight, depending on where the ball arrives at him, and the angles that are associated with how that ball arrives at him. So, you know, it's impossible. And the guy who taught me this actually was Desmond Haynes, because I couldn't hit straight down the ground. And my definition of hitting straight was hitting the ball between sort of like mid off and mid on.
Yeah.
And so we did a batting session, and I said that I want to hit the ball straight. And he was on the bowling machine, and he bowled me some straight balls, and I hit them and got them, or I didn't get them. And then he bowled me one outside the line of off stump. It was about, I don't know, six stump, and I hit it through extra cover. And I sort of beat myself up because I wanted to hit that ball down the ground. And yeah. He said, well, actually, you've just hit through the line of the ball there, because where the ball is, you've just hit straight through the line of it. And that's exactly what Gayle does, is he hits straight through the line of the ball. Now, obviously, because of the power that the bloke's got, a bowler then has to adjust, doesn't he? Because if he just keeps bowling in the same place, then he's always going to go out of the park, as we very well know with Chris Gayle. Mm. So they adjust their lines a lot, and all he does is just use that line to hit straight through it. So when he gets it to deep backward square leg, very rarely is that done through flicking his wrist like a Peterson would do. What he does is he uses the angle that the ball arrives at him to hit it into different parts of the ground. Yeah, he's not a deft batter, is he? He's not a deflection batter. No. He's somebody that just sees the line and length of the ball and hits directly through it. And it's the bowler that gives him the angles rather than him.
Well, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because with a lot of people, especially, you know, in the traditional way, when you talk about playing straight, as you said, it's, you know, there's a certain area that you're hitting the ball. And if you're not hitting the ball there, therefore it's not playing straight.
Mm.
But what we're saying really there is that straight is a bit more of a complicated concept than just hitting the ball straight past mid-off's left hand.
Or conversely, it's a more simplistic way of looking at it. So hitting straight, if I'm trying to hit a ball that's missing my stumps by another set of stumps on the offside, and I'm trying to hit that down the ground because that's my understanding of what straight is, then obviously I'm going to increase the instance of that not hitting the middle of the bat.
Yes,
because I'm not using angles properly. So hitting straight, you know, if I've got a ball that's 3 foot wide of off stump, hitting straight as a right-handed batter is to hit it through point. Equally, if I've got a ball that's middle stump, then hitting straight would be to beat the stumps either side at the bowler's end.
So the message there for batsmen and coaches is to think more about, less about having a fixed definition of what straight is, and think a little bit more about what straight actually means to you as that batsman in that situation.
Absolutely right, because you know Chris Gayle will hit the ball straight back over people's heads, but it will be determined by what line that ball is, and he'll hit straight through it. Equally, if it's outside off stump, he'll hit that straight through extra cover, and equally, if it's on the line of leg stump or outside leg stump, he'll hit straight through it, and he'll access different areas of the onside. The principle is exactly the same. He is hitting straight through the line of a ball.
Yeah, and it normally ends up in row Z or beyond.
Well, as you proved the other day with your fantastic stat about his frequency of hitting sixes, you're absolutely right.
I think that's probably gone up since I made that stat. I said that stat as well. I must have done after hitting all those sixes the other day. So,
yeah. So he does boost the stats a little bit on that one, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Now, a complete non sequitur here, Gareth. Something you might also be interested in, and Berners, you as well. I came across the other day a lovely little tool which could be used very nicely for coaching and many other things as well, and it's called Noteboard. Have you seen this, Gareth?
No, I haven't. Far away.
It's $12, £10, and it is a if you imagine an index card, you know these little I use them all the time. These little index cards, old fashioned index card. I use them for taking notes and things. Here's one of them. It's that size.
Yeah.
It folds out. It's like a whiteboard type material, but it folds out into a 35 by 15 inch whiteboard.
Oh.
So you can put notes on it. You can write whatever you like. It comes with a pen. It comes in a little bag, which you can use as a rubber. And then once you finish doing what you're doing, you can clear it all off, fold it back up, stick it back in the bag, and it goes. It can put in your pocket or into a little bag or something like that. So it can be used for many, many applications, but it's, I think, as a coaching tool, you know, if you need to illustrate something quickly, what a great way to just have a whiteboard in your pocket.
You know, it's fantastic for people to get their views. So say if you had that up on the wall or on the floor of a changing room and you had some people that weren't particularly forthcoming with views because they didn't want to be shouted down in the team meeting or whatever, they could just scribble their views on it and then everybody can sort of have a look at it as they're walking past. It's it's great to get everybody's view because that doesn't rarely happen, or very rarely happens, does it, in teams. But it might be a good medium for extracting information out of maybe a quieter one. So I like that.
Lovely little tool, easy to throw in a bag. You know, you can just have it with you all the time. Berners, can you see a benefit of having a portable whiteboard like that?
Yeah, I like it. It could be good for keywords. If you had certain players that were doing something fundamentally wrong, you could keep it nice and simple and, you know, just words like straight, especially in net situations, if you had that held up or pinned somewhere. Yeah, nice, just so they can visualise things. Good,
yep.
I like it.
Yeah. I think
you could monitor a net, couldn't you? You could, look at somebody's player misses or monitor the number of no balls at bowling nets, which is a particular bugbear of mine. So you get somebody every time a no ball, you put it up, and then at the end of a session, you go, right, we've bowled 12 no balls in that session. Next session, we're going to try and get that down to 5 or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, I like it. Good, mate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you want to get your hands on one of those, there's no comeback for us. This is purely a recommendation of a nice thing I've found. There's no disclosure or any profit that we make from it. If you want to head to thenoteboard.com, theNoteboard.com, and you can. It's an American firm, but they deliver worldwide. So wherever you are in the world, you can get yourself one of these cool little tools.
So it's not called the David Hinchcliffe whiteboard then, portable whiteboard?
Yeah, and I make out of every $12, I make 8.
Oh, that's not a bad deal, mate.
No, that's not. No, it's nothing to do with me at all. No, nothing to do with me at all. But it's an excellent little tool, so I couldn't not talk about it, especially from a coaching perspective.
Yeah, good. Like that.
And then one more thing I wanted to talk about in the introduction was Tendulkar hitting 40. Gareth, you're hitting 40 as well.
Yeah, that's the only similarity, I have to say.
He had a lovely, someone gave a lovely cake I saw the other day. Did you see it?
Mate, they love a cake in India. Every birthday, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, obviously, he's going to get a fairly good one. But every time any member of staff within our lot or any cricketer had one, there would be a huge ceremony back at the hotel. And, you know, Mr. Ben would come out with a blooming, you know, as if out of nowhere, with a massive, great big cake. If you win a game, there's a cake. All they do is change the name of the team on the cake.
He had one. It was a cricket stadium, and it was actually about the size of a cricket stadium as well.
Beautiful. Any excuse for cake. Tendulkar doesn't eat a lot of cake, though. I mean, he somehow is, even at 40 years old, he still seems like the 16-year-old.
Yeah, I agree. His hair's slightly less Buffon than it used to be when he was 16, though, wasn't it? But, I mean, amazing that he can keep going. In fact, we had a conversation around a table. There's a number of coaches around a table last night where I am at the moment. And we were talking about, you know, why does he still play? Because there's a great chance that his stats are only going to go down. Yeah. He's not going to achieve what he's doing. And we had a massive discussion about what is the motivation to keep him going. And in the end, we just came up with the fact that whatever he does in his future career, it's unlikely that he's going to get the same buzz out of it that he has from playing and being a blooming good player and, you know, winning World Cups and being a number one and scoring runs around the world. You know, it's only going to be a step down, isn't it? You know, what is a step up from where he is now, which is effectively a god?
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. But I don't think either he's clinging on. Certainly don't get the impression he's clinging on and it's all a bit sad. You know, you still feel like he has plenty to contribute to India.
Yeah, I do. But, you know, he does spend a lot of time away purely because he gets a life away from India. And, you know, is he going to be a politician like Jayasuriya has done in Sri Lanka? I don't know. He's not going to commentate, I shouldn't have thought, because, you know, why would he? It's going to be fascinating to watch the next stage after, you know, Sachin retires. And who knows, we might still be having this conversation when he hits 50.
Yeah, the modern WG Grace. And that's the trick, isn't it? You keep finding challenges. You know, I mean, you know this as well, Gareth. You're on the approach to the big 4-0. I'm not far behind you.
Thanks for reminding me, mate.
Well, I'm not far behind you, Gareth. So, you know, don't worry, I'm only a couple of years behind you. So, you know, that's not going to be long for me either. So, but what you need to do is find new challenges, don't you? I mean, whether no matter what success or you've had in the past, the way to keep that passion and enjoyment going is to find those new challenges. And that's the same for everyone, whether you're Tendulkar, whether you're Garraway, whether you're Hinchcliffe, or whether you're Berners.
I like the end of that. Or whether you're Berners. That's so harsh. Sorry, Berners. He didn't mean to make it sound like that. I actually think you're very talented, and all of the challenges that you're going to be faced with, you'll meet easily, mate.
Oh, I try, Gareth. Thanks for supporting me.
Berners, I do not have a bad word to say about you. You're a wonderful human being.
You're backtracking.
No, I've never said a bad word about you, and I never will.
The cover-up's always worse than the crime. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, I love you both. I love you both.
It's time for the questions section on the show, and every week we have a couple of questions which are sent in by listeners or readers to the site. And the best of those questions wins a prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Berners, you've got the questions this week. What's the first one?
First question is in from Cam, and he's saying that he's played some cricket back in India. He played for his university and his college for a while. He's also been involved in the academy since he was 16. However, work's taken him to the UK, and he started playing club cricket, first and second team, quite consistent as a left-hand opening batsman. He's currently in South Africa for work. Sounds like he travels a fair bit.
Yeah.
Just looking for another stint to perform, he says, and any advice that we can give him to get the best out of his game in the coming years. So it sounds like he's a bit of a stop-start player and wants to know what sort of things he should do and focus on to keep that wave going.
Yeah, that's right. It's quite a general question, and I thought that might open things up for discussions quite a bit, because I know that's quite a common thing, that people get into the game and then life takes over and they go off and do something else and they come back a little bit later in life and they want to get the best from themselves. So I thought this would be a good way to chat a little bit about it. And I suppose the first question that Cam will want to ask himself is, what does he want to get out of playing cricket? At the age of 29, he probably still hasn't quite given up on his dreams of playing international cricket, but it's probably not that realistic either. So maybe he needs to have the first question he needs to ask himself is, what does he want to get out of it? Does he want to play to a high standard of club cricket? And if so, there's certain things he'll need to do to achieve that. Or does he just want to enjoy himself and have a bit of fun and get together with a bunch of lads every Saturday afternoon and enjoy his game and then go off and carry on with the rest of his life? So I guess that would be the first thing that I would say to look at, because from there, you can then sort of fan out on what extras you can do after that.
Well, I'd completely echo what you just said there, because, I mean, it's a different question, not one that we normally get, but I think you've answered the motivational angle of it really, really well. I think there's two things that a player can do in this given situation, and it's a fairly rare one. It's certainly not one that I come across too often, so I'm sort of constructing rather than talking from experience here. But
yeah,
the first thing you can do is really reconnect with the things that you did when you were playing and you were successful and you were playing your university cricket in India. So remember back to what those were. You've had experiences in the past and they can inform your present and even the future. So give that a go. But also, I think there's an opportunity once you've picked out the best bits of you to also reflect back on it, on your previous time, previous stint, as you put it, and say, right, okay, knowing what I know about myself, if I was to coach myself now, what would I ask myself to do? And it's an opportunity to actually look at yourself in a fairly objective way and maybe pick two or three parts of a game or your game that you want to really, really improve. So, for example, since the last time that you played, there might be some innovations in the game of cricket that have come about that you think, hang on a minute, I reckon I could do that. If I practiced that a little bit, I could do that. So whilst remembering the stuff that you did before, also you've got a unique opportunity, and not one that comes across very often for a cricketer of any age, to actually go, do you know what? That was what I did back then. That was fantastic, and I want to retain some of that. But if I could coach myself as I was back then, what would I now do with all that I know and all that I've seen in the game of cricket and all that I know about myself? What would I do slightly differently? And that doesn't happen very often to many cricketers, because generally cricketers are either on 12-month cycles where they play all of the time, or they're on 2 6-month cycles where they're playing in a season. Then they're doing some preparation towards the beginning of the next season. And it's a bit of a treadmill, whereas you've broken that treadmill. So you can use it as a fantastic opportunity to review effectively what you did and how you're going to plan, to make yourself better now.
Yeah, it's very much a clean sheet, isn't it? You can, especially, you've travelled across the world. Nobody knows what you were like before when you were playing. Maybe you feel like you never had the opportunity you wanted as a leg spin bowler. You can turn up to a club and go, yeah, I bowl leg breaks. And then, you can work on that and you can be a decent leg spin bowler. There's a guy who has been a regular contributor to the Pitch Vision Academy site for many years, even before it was Pitch Vision Academy. His name is Dave Thompson. And he didn't take up cricket at all until he was into his late 40s. And he turned himself from someone who had never played cricket. He was a surfer all through his youth. Never played cricket, hardly ever played any competitive sport at all. And he decided to take up leg spin. And he turned himself from that into somebody who can bowl decent level club leg spin and really, really enjoy playing his club leg spin and batting at 11 and doing his best to catch the ball that comes to him. And that's because he's got a bit of grass across from his house that he cut a wicket. He got a mower and he cut a wicket and he just started bowling at a target and working on his action and bowling and bowling and bowling. And he turned himself into a decent level club spinner over the course of 3, 4, 5 years. So it just goes to show there's things you can do even very, very late in your cricketing career if you really want to go down that route.
No, I think that's a good example. And the difference probably between those two examples is the fact that there was no cricket history beforehand. So it was very much teaching himself from scratch. I think the advantage of this particular case, this question that we're answering, is that there is a bit of cricket history. Therefore, there's a knowledge and an experience. But also there's that gap, isn't there, between playing, which enables you to think, well, how do I want to make my game better? What sort of cricket do I want to be this time round? And no, very few people get the opportunity to do that. And I mean, I'm going to play one game of cricket this summer.
Oh.
And because I'm 40 and I thought I'd play a game of cricket to mark that I'm 40, and that could possibly be the end for me, I have to say. And I haven't played for ages, but I'm already sort of planning what I could do in that game that would be slightly different from what I've done before. So I'm not going to practice it particularly, but mentally I'm going to prepare myself slightly different than what I've done before and just see what happens as a bit of an experiment. And you're almost in the same position as that, although you're going to keep playing for a bit longer than I am because you're certainly a little bit younger than me. But yeah, I mean, just give something different a go, I think. And it sounds like your motivation may have waned in the past. So see if you can find that thing that keeps you going, so you're still playing at 40 as opposed to finishing playing at 31 and then maybe having the same thing happen to you when you get to 37, 38. So see if you can find the spark.
Yeah, that spark is all important, isn't it? And if you've got that motivation, then you can achieve a lot and you can enjoy it, which is the essential part. Whatever your goal is, I guess really it's just about having something fun to do that takes you away from whatever your job is during the week. Good luck, Cam. Let us know how you get on. Okay, what's the next question, Berners?
Next question is from Safe, and he says that he's heard a lot about bowling with heavy and light cricket balls to help improve bowling speeds. He just wants to know if this works and what kind of weights he should work with if he's going to try and do this.
I like it. I wouldn't overuse it. I think it's a good activation tool and a good challenge tool as well for people. So whether it be a weighted bat, whether it be a weighted ball to bowl, whether it be a weighted ball for throwing, you can often find that you might trigger something in the kinetic chain that you wouldn't normally do with normal weight bats, balls or whatever. I use it mostly, I have to say, rather than bowling. I do use those heavy balls to bowl in preparation for some games or depending on what somebody's bowling action is looking like at the time. But I do a lot of this stuff for throwing. And one of the things that throwing with a heavier ball does is it makes you delay the throwing arm coming through, which means that the kinetic chain can do all that it has to do. And then the delayed throwing arm means that you get that whip action that you don't always get when somebody gets their hips and their shoulders to go through at the same time when they throw. So if I've got somebody who's throwing poorly or throwing with a lack of power and their kinetic chain is slightly out, I'll get them to throw with a heavier ball because that will delay the throwing arm coming through. And you want that real big pre-stretch in the throwing arm. So everything's gone before it and then the throwing arm comes through as a sort of end of the whip. You know, if you're cracking a whip, it comes through as the end of a whip. And that delay comes from that heavier ball. So I believe in it. So in that respect. But I think as with any tool, it's how and why you use it as opposed to, yes, it's a good thing, you know, per se across the board.
Yeah, definitely. Most of what I know about this stuff comes from two things. One is a very old piece of research that was done on bowlers with using heavy balls and contrast bowling, which is using a lighter ball, and that was inconclusive as to whether it made much of a difference. And the other thing is the non-official research, shall we say, done by Stephen Jones, who is a coach on Pitch Vision Academy and also does a lot of work at first class and school level near where you are, Gareth, I think.
Yeah, just down the road.
Yeah, and he is a massive proponent of that. He did it throughout his career and said that it sped up his bowling. And he also said he does it with younger bowlers and senior professional level bowlers, and it makes a huge difference. So, I mean, that's obviously not as effective a proof as, a double blind trial or anything like that. However, you know, it is evidence in the case towards it. And he uses balls which are a lot heavier than the research says that you should use. But then there isn't much research around. So, you know, he goes up to a 500 gram ball to bowl with. And then he contrasts that with a lighter ball, like a tennis ball as well, just to, you know, you get one for the strength element of it, if you like, and one for the speed element of it, if you like. And there is a lot of research around the idea of general research around the idea of being able to move a light implement quickly, which is basically what you're doing with a cricket ball. So I can definitely see there's an advantage to that. The downside of it is that it's quite hard to find cricket balls that are of a different weight, significantly enough a different weight, to be able to put this kind of research, this kind of thing into action, to test it out for yourself, if you like. I know that Stefan does a small amount of bowling with a heavier ball, a medium amount of bowling with a normal ball, and then contrast that with an even smaller amount of bowling with a lighter ball. So you have to be careful with it, because you don't want to be changing your action. But also there's definite benefits to be able to go a little bit heavier. Well, it appears anyway, it's definite benefits to going a little bit heavier with bowling a ball that's a bit heavier. So if you can get hold of those heavier cricket balls, I think it's definitely something worth trying, putting into your program and considering it almost as part of your strength and conditioning element, as long as you're careful with it, because you're in a dangerous area where there's a crossover between strength and general strength and speed and general conditioning and the technical work that you need to have as a bowler, and that there's a margin for error there you've got to be careful about. But if you're aware of that and you go about it, then I think it's definitely something worth trying.
Yeah, it is worth trying. The stuff that I use, I don't use the cricket balls of them, and there's a couple of reasons for that. I think safety is a bit of an issue with the really heavy cricket balls, because, you know, you could get, for example, in a net situation at our clubs, most of the people that we're talking to here are involved in clubs or schools cricket, that a kid picks a significantly heavier cricket ball that still looks the same as a normal cricket ball out of a bag, ends up bowling it at somebody. And that becomes a bit of an issue. So I'll tell you what I use. I get some of these sand filled balls. They're soft sand filled balls, and they're a different weight, obviously depending on the amount of sand that's inside the balls.
The small medicine balls or yoga balls, that kind of thing.
Yeah, which are cricket ball size, yet they obviously don't feel like a cricket ball because they're all squidgy. But I use them for hitting, for throwing, and for bowling. Quite a lot, very much as an activation thing, very much as a strength development thing. But as you said earlier, David, you've got to be really specific about how you use it, because we can't get away from the fact that once we've trained the body to bowl quick or to bowl with using these balls, we've still got to then get the ball somewhere near the right place. And the kinesthetics around that are quite important, and the repeatability, particularly for sort of 50% of the population that really need repeatability, is massive. So if we're constantly changing the ball weight all of the time, and we have no plan behind it, how we're doing it, we're going to find that our accuracy is going to go down the pan. So it's a real balance act, as you say. I would use the sand-filled balls because, as a safety-wise, they certainly give me a bit more confidence. I'll be brutally honest. And secondly, I'd be very specific about how they use them. And you can't get away from the fact that, you know, eventually we're going to be using a cricket ball to deliver our skill. And skill isn't just the production of power and speed. It's also the ability to get the ball in the right area and to practice the skills that get the ball to move laterally and deceive the batter. So it's very much a part of a bowling program. I think that some coaches maybe use it too extensively within a bowling program. As we're everything, we need balance.
Yeah, it's definitely not a magic pill. The way I see it is kind of a continuum, where you have at one end of the continuum, you have your absolute, you know, your pure strength, the stuff that you do in the gym. It's heavier weights, and it's the least specific type of strength that you need, and speed that you need. And then at the other end, you have bowling a cricket ball. And then in between that, there's a whole big balance where you're moving slowly away from the massive heavy weights through to slightly lighter weights, then through to a heavy implement, which is like a cricket ball, and then through to. So if you're focusing on any one of those at the expense of any one of the others, that's where you're going to fall down. So you need to have a base of strength which is more general, but you also need to be able to bowl a cricket ball with good technique, but you also need something somewhere in the middle of that as well. And that's where things like medicine balls, heavier cricket balls, that kind of work has a place. Be careful with it, but it's certainly something to consider. Gareth is back on the soapbox this week. He's got 60 seconds to talk about anything that he likes. Mark Garraway, over to you.
I'm going to talk about losing games of cricket because I've yet to play a whole season without actually losing a game of cricket. And I think it's really important about how you go about that. And I'm not talking about the spirit of cricket here. I'm talking about the review of losing games of cricket because, you know, when we lose something, we tend to get really emotional about things and possibly irrational. And I think time is a really good thing to have on your side. So you listen to somebody like a Sir Clive Woodward, and if they lost a game, they would generally have some time in between the end of the game and their review period, which allows the emotions to drive off a little bit. The emotions aren't really that useful, aren't going to contribute to disappear, and for the emotions and the thought processes that are actually going to help you get forward and go forward as a team, can come to the surface. And so that's something that I think is really important. Players are, in particular in the Northern Hemisphere, are coming into their season. You will lose games of cricket, so just choose your review time effectively and you'll find that those losses actually fuel you to go forward rather than to become a downward spiral.
Right then, that wraps it up for this week's show. Before we leave, we need to decide on a winner for the prize, which is of course the online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So Gareth, we had Cam's question about coming back into cricket, and we had Sy's question about heavy ball bowling. Which did you prefer?
I'm going to go for Cam's question because we haven't had one like that on the show, and it was different, wasn't it? And different and relevant to him, and that's what we ask people to do when they're asking questions. And I wish him all the best. So be brave, Cam, and give us a little update of how it's all going.
Yes, please do. And you can use one of the online coaching courses on Pitch Vision Academy to help out whatever your goal is. There's something there available for you. Just head over to pitchvision.com/academy and take a look at that. Now, Berners, if someone wanted to get in touch with the show and have their own question answered, what would they need to do?
Drop us an email. The address for that is coach@pitchvision.com, or give us a call, and it's 02088 167 691.
That's right. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and our Twitter is at @PVCricketCoach. So we're infinitely contactable 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can download it using iTunes. Just head over to iTunes and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us there. And if you don't want to use iTunes, then of course you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and get all the download instructions for any device that you like. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers, guys.